there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so first and foremost, before we get into today's episode, which is friggin' fantastic, by the way, our JREP Summit downloads page is now up. So whether you've attended the event or not, you're welcome to hop over to it. It's on our website, nippontradings.com. There's a link right near the top of the homepage there, and we'll also link to it in this episode's show notes, of course. All of the day's video presentations, downloadable slides, and of course the photo gallery are there for you. Sadly, the venue's sound system was problematic, and while you will be able to hear the presenters, the quality isn't nearly as good as it should be, which, as we keep telling you all before every event, is one of the reasons we recommend that everyone who can't attend in person get a live streaming ticket. The Zoom room had slightly better sound, questions were repeated in the chat if they couldn't be heard properly, and a lot of the questions that were typed in and didn't make it to the stage were answered via chat as well. But anyway, yes, the content is now online and available to download on our website at nippontradings.com. That's N-I-P-P-O-N, Nippon Tradings with an S, all one word, .com. Have a blast and let us know what you think in the comments section or anywhere online. All right, so for today's episode, as promised, this is a really, really good one. I've had the pleasure of interviewing Yuko Tomizuka. Now, Tomizuka-san is a real estate rock star. She's an investor, property investor, and appraiser based in Okinawa. And we talk about her life and experience, about how our childhood traumas define us, and of course about the real meat and bones of her work, which is official evaluation. So when is official evaluation and appraisal required or recommended? The challenges that she faces starting from scratch with a brand new business model, the unique challenges involved in working with difficult but rewarding clients and projects, and then about her initiative of consulting and catering to descendants of property owners in Japan who are dealing with property inheritances and succession matters. We review some case studies together that she's worked on, and we also talk a bit more generally about Japanese inheritance laws, common practices, as well as the differences in approach to real estate investment potential between older and younger generations in Japan, creative solutions, family offices, development projects, financing for descendants, you name it. And to end on a practical note, we also discuss which locations or types of locations offer the best potential for these kinds of projects. So really fascinating conversation with a real powerhouse of a woman. I'm sure you'll find some real value in this one. Enjoy the episode, and I'll see you again on the other side. All right, so thank you for coming. It's great to meet you again in person. We met over Zoom. But so before we get into the actual stuff that you do, and there's a lot to talk about there, can you give me a rough background story, how you got to doing what you're doing, how did you get interested in the first place?
My name is Yuko, and then basically I have been doing a sort of the real estate investment advisor and appraisal work. And my background is I have roughly 35 years of real estate experience, and I just started my career as a real estate appraiser and got involved in several of the projects like urban renewal or the variation or the you know, the cash flow projection or something. And I did this work roughly 12 years, and then I went abroad to learn some other appraisal real estate practice overseas, and in Italy. I did my MBA in Italy, and also some part from the United States. And then I came back here in Japan and I joined several financial institutions, and like Bear Stearns and several German investment banks. And just the European financial crisis, they withdrew their businesses from Japan. And eventually, I had an opportunity to move to Okinawa. My husband is Brazilian.
Okay, that explains a lot. Okay.
Yeah. My husband is Brazilian. And then I joined the Brazilian state-owned petroleum company. And their headquarters in Asia region was there in Okinawa. So I just supported that operation for about years. But I like Okinawa. And I'm personally doing Aikido, and a good Aikido master was there.
Wow.
So therefore, I settled in Okinawa, and have been doing the real estate investment advisory work for the non-Japanese investors, the institution, and all family offices, and so on. And on the other hand, that I have been doing several the appraisal work. And some opportunity, I joined the global conference in terms of real estate or investment, and I shared my experience or views or the up-to-date topics.
Yeah, I've seen some of your presentations, but we'll get into them in a minute. But just before that, I'm wondering, so you're saying 35 years ago is when you started working in real estate?
Yes.
How did you get to that? Because that's not a very common practice, especially for women in Japan, and especially 35 years ago. So what drew you to real estate?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Well, when I was 11, younger, my father had some problem with the real estate, and then we were running a sort of gas station, and then he got cheated, and someone took over all the real estate.
Wow.
Yeah, it was tough and very shocking experience to me. And I learned that, we should learn real estate. Yeah. And then at that time, I was thinking to be, you know, the lawyer or something. But the professor from my university told me that there are real estate licenses or, you know, the certifications. And then I just started studying and learning to get the certification of real estate appraiser.
So your childhood trauma basically
sort of
brought you to
where you are today.
That's amazing. So you speak Italian, Japanese, English, any other languages?
Portuguese.
Portuguese, of course, yes.
Yeah.
Wow, that's very impressive.
Well, thank you.
Okay, so appraisal and evaluation. Yeah. We've been dealing with real estate not as long as you, just about 12 years, but that's not a very common thing in Japan, at least for smaller projects, right? We rarely hear about anyone asking to bring in an appraiser before a sale or a purchase. When would you get involved normally?
Well, nowadays, like the succession, there's someone that passed away, and then people think about the tax for the succession. The sozokuzei, right? In Japanese. And in that case, they will need to have this kind of document to justify what the value is.
Right.
And then sometimes this works. And also the tax declaration they needed, or when someone complete a transaction and then they had to justify their prices or something. So in the context of tax declaration, you know, refund or something, and then some people try to get the appraisal, and or someone want to have the good loan amount when it comes to investment, they come to the appraiser and then, you know, they ask our services.
So essentially, when a bank or a lender or any kind of loan is involved, that's normally where you would come in?
Not always. As long as the investor is happy with the loan that they can get, it's okay. But if you want to have a lot, you know, the good amount of loan, and then you want to justify the collateral property's value, yeah? And then you need to talk with appraisers to arrange a good, you know, the amount of loan.
To convince the lender to give you the right amount of loan.
Yeah. The banks, the most of financial institutions, they do their internal appraisal, yeah? But it's quite conservative, actually.
Yeah, I've seen that a few times.
That's why sometimes the lenders, depending on the situation, depending on the market condition, they need to be aggressive, but generally speaking, they are somehow conservative. So that if you prepare this kind of variation, I cannot guarantee, but the better than nothing. Yeah.
Right. So then once they have this kind of appraisal, mm-hmm. is it relatively easy to convince the lender to raise the amount of the loan?
Yes. Okay. At least they need to, you know, listen to you.
Right.
Yeah.
And you also, you mentioned that you went overseas to catch up on some certifications. You've also been certified not just in Japan, in other countries as well,
yes,
right?
Yes, the UK and the United States. Yeah.
Have you done any appraisal work in other countries?
Yes. Yeah. In the US and UK domain as well.
And with any relation to your Japanese heritage? Like, did you represent Japanese buyers or did you do anything related to Japanese?
Japanese buyers. Yeah.
Okay. In the US or the UK?
Yes. Yeah.
I see.
They really, when they want to invest something overseas countries, and then they really need to check the value.
Yeah.
And then I usually work with local professionals, that among the appraiser, which means AI member of AI Appraiser Institute members or the RICS members. I just work together and make some research. And then the debut outcome, and then the report to my clients. This is what I did.
It must be very rare. I mean, somebody who does what you do and can also service clients and sellers in more than a single country. You must be in demand, right?
I believe so.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now, back to the podcast.
Yeah.
And then, okay, so when the European financial crisis hit, that was, what, 15, 16 years ago?
Yeah.
And that's when you switched over to running your own business.
Yes.
How was that in the beginning?
Well, in the beginning, yeah, it was challenging, but the, well, I was just enjoying the starting up, you know, the time.
The challenges.
Challenges, of course, yeah, yeah.
What sort of challenges did you run into?
Well, the it's not easy for me to areas or the directions that I should, you know, head into. Yeah.
To figure out the strategy.
Yeah, the strategy, of course, yeah, yeah, yeah. The targeting the institutional investors or the individuals, the which region or which asset class. And then the, at the end of the day, it's interesting. I have been dealing with quite challenging assignment.
Yeah. Like what?
Well, the this is one client, non-Japanese, and they have been looking for 20 years the good property.
20 years?
20 years, yeah, here in Japan.
And wow, then the, talk about analysis paralysis, okay.
Yeah, and then the most of the real estate professionals, you know, the brokers, consultants, declined that, you know, assignment.
Yeah.
And then they had trouble. And then the...
Were they both non-Japanese or Japanese spouse and foreign husband? Or
it's a bit institutional.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then the, finally, the I get to know them before the COVID, and then the, I met them in person. They are not in Japan, but other countries. And then the, finally, they came to me, and Yuko, would you like to help us? yeah, of course. What kind of trouble you have? And I really
understand. And you
succeeded. Yes, yes. I really understand their issues. And I just analyzed issues, and then the, we just split a sort of the stages. The, let's target the stage one. And stage one is a sort of identification, the problem identification, and what kind of area or properties they should look for. And then the, through this assignment, we just come up with some conclusion, right? And then depending on the conclusion, we just selected the counterpart. And then the, we did research, and we just selected some counterpart, or which means a property, yeah? And then the, we approached to them. And then potential counterpart declined 3 times that offer.
Yeah, we get that
then,
a lot.
Yeah, patiently I convinced them.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, at least once, I want to listen to you. And then the, we arranged a sort of meeting, and then patiently convinced them, and then the... we just exchanged LOI, letter of intent.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then started our businesses, and then we made a contract. It's almost 1 year. And then started actually the construction stage.
Was that a cash purchase or a financed purchase?
Cash.
Cash purchase, okay. Yeah, would it be, it would probably be difficult to convince a Japanese lender to lend to a non-resident
they
company?
They are 100%... equity.
Okay.
But their property selection criteria is really, really difficult.
Okay.
That's why. And then the very special investor, that's why many Japanese developers declined this kind of offer. And then...
So are those most of your foreign clients, larger companies or institutions, or do you also serve individuals?
The both.
Both.
Yeah, both.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the individuals, are they mainly in Okinawa, or do you work all over the country now?
Basically all over the country.
All over the country. Yeah, because again, you're pretty rare in what you do, so you must have a lot of demand for your work.
I believe so.
Yeah. Okay, and then you've obviously, again, I've read some of your presentations, and
you
cover a wide range of topics, but the most recent one that you sent to me was the most interesting for me.
Yeah.
You're tackling the Akiya issue in Japan.
Yeah.
Can you tell us more about that, please?
Well, there are, my background started, I have been working as arbitrator in the court. Yeah. And then through that, my experience, I found out why Akiya has been so spread in all over Japan. Because like the succession, and then the people just don't want to touch this issue. Yeah. Who is going to take care of their parents' house?
The parents themselves don't do much about it either, right?
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and then the it takes time, and then the at the end of the day, at the actual succession stage, the someone is outside Japan, or someone get sort of how can I say, nincho, the Alzheimer or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really tough to, you know, the move on to the next stage.
Mm.
So that's why there are so many IKEA issues here in Japan. I really understand.
It's just mendokusai for everyone involved, so they just leave
it,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And they really need to, you know, the children have their own, you know, the property, the house, and then they keep paying their loans, right?
Yeah.
So the number one is time and effort. Time-consuming and a lot of effort. But number two, the financial, yeah, that they need to pay back their own loan, and they don't have, they cannot afford to take care of, you know, the abandoned houses. Right?
And I guess they don't really see the value in the property because
of course, mom
and dad's old
Kitanai
house.
And then the isolated location or the it's not so exciting.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, so then how do you approach that? What do you do?
Well, I just work with the brokers, and then what I did is just, you know, providing the valuation for them, and then they are making some strategy, like the case I shared is one widow, and then the two daughters.
Mm.
And the widow has one apartment, the old apartment, and land. And
apartment, you mean a whole building?
Yeah, whole building.
Aparto, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Whole building, the standalone.
Yeah.
There are several tenants. But it's quite old, need to refurbish, and then many vacancies. And then the rental value has been decreasing, right?
By the way, I'll pause you for a minute because I want to ask you a question about that. In our experience, we feel like the older generation in Japan actually was more investment savvy, because a lot of the properties that our customers buy, investment properties, they come from third, fourth generation elderly Japanese.
Mm.
And even when they do try to plan ahead and they ask the children, what shall I do with the property? Mm. The kids many times say, just sell it and give us the money, right?
Yeah.
Where did this gap start to happen between the older generation and the younger? Well, why are younger Japanese not interested in investments, do you think?
Well, that's an interesting question. This is Japanese inheritance tax. Inheritance tax here in Japan are quite high.
Prohibitive.
Yeah. Basically. So this is just after World War II, if I'm not mistaken. And after the Japanese strong economy, and majority of the wealth come from real estate.
Mm.
Yeah. And then the actual succession, that most of Japanese people, Japanese, you know, the older generations, have limited amount of cash and a lot of real estate, one or two, but its value seems to be huge, right? And then the first thing is need to pay the tax, the inheritance tax, and split equally. So this is quite important. And therefore, they will need to sell the asset. Of course, they want to hand over their properties, like the first son, Chonan in Japan, needs to take care of. It is just the old Japanese mindset, but actually we cannot follow, you know, this kind of traditional mindset.
The law actually doesn't allow that. Right?
The Japanese civil code is also, you know, the treating us equally, right?
Yeah.
That even though parents won't hand over the most of the fortune to the first son, and then the other children can
don't
sue
get
them.
Anything, basically.
And then the civil court reserve, you know, this kind of right for other children.
Mm.
Yeah. that's why the...
I actually have a friend in this exact situation now.
Yeah. From parents' viewpoint, parents want to just avoid any conflict among children, right? Yeah. So the, at the end of the day, they decided to sell. And then the children, some are good relation, but the most of, you know, children are not in good relation, right?
Not close to each other at all.
Yeah. So therefore, they agreed to sell and split, and then, you know, they're...
That's the best case scenario. Worst case, they go to court, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So conflict aversion is a large part of it, too.
Yeah.
Okay, so now, if you've been following this podcast for a while, and in particular our JREP sessions, you're probably more than familiar with Blanca Kobayashi of Arc Reform. They're a bilingual renovation company serving clients in the Kanagawa and Kanto area, so Tokyo, Chiba, Saitama, Kawasaki, Yokohama. They can handle simple, small-scale projects as well as full house renovations, and they will work with you on the perfect design for your dream family home. But not only homes, Arc Reform also handle commercial property renovations, offices, restaurants, bars, shops, you name it, from traditional classics to the latest trends in interior design and renovations. So you want to email them for a free consultation and quote at info@arcreform.com. That's ARK reform, all one word, .com, and give your home or commercial space the love and care that it deserves.
Okay, so back to your case study. Yes. So they have an aparto, but mostly vacant.
Yeah, mostly vacant. And then that large parcel of land, yeah, it's identified as farmland. So it's really difficult to develop as is condition, right? Mm. And then the consultancy approached them, and I just supported from valuation side for this case, yeah? And the consultant proposed like that. Look, this large parcel of land, we just support, and then they talk with the local authority, and then they had the permission to develop. And then they, under this permission, we just put this a sort of bid, you know, the auction or something. Yeah?
Because technically, you can divide the parcel of land into smaller title deeds, 500 square meters and under, and then it's easy to convert, right? I mean, the solutions are there, they just don't know about them.
The owners, they don't know. Yeah. And then the owner need, it's really hard for the non-professionals to deal with everything, right? So therefore, the real estate agent arranged a sort of bid, and then the several developers proposed some plans, and then they chose the good one, and then the large parcel one was sold a quite good amount, you know, the settlement price. And one parcel of land was saved for the one of the daughter to live there. Yeah. And then the now that family, I mean, the landlord got some the capital, like the proceed, sales proceed.
From the other parcels of land.
The parcel of land.
Yeah.
The large one, right? And then with that amount of money, they used for the innovation, sort of redevelopment of that old apartment.
Yeah.
Old apartment converted into new one. The because they can arrange the finance, and then the so this new one give the good cash flow to landlord. I mean the old widow and two daughters.
Yeah.
So it's a really good solution, right?
Very creative solution. Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Technically, it's not complicated. You just need to know how to bring all those pieces together, right?
Yes. And then good know-how, and then solve everything.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then, I guess my question is:
yes.
Number one, how do you find your customers? These kinds of customers, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, how do you convince somebody who's never dealt with real estate in their life, because they're probably approached by greedy developers all the time anyway, how do you sell the idea and the consultancy to them? So number one, how do you find them? And number two, how do you convince them?
Well, that consultancy, the K Corporation, they have been launching a sort of a good promotion like these success cases without disclosing any, you know, details. And then they made a presentation, not only face-to-face, but also online presentation and weekend, the arranging. And then the good marketing for the online, you know, online basis. And they demonstrate their ideas and what they did. And then the key is, you know, the landlords and people have this access or not, right? So the knowledge is quite important for you.
Mm.
And then people got convinced, and then the slightly or the story, a little by little, demonstrated their issues, right? Most of people have some issue. Mm. So I think they're very good at this kind of marketing, you know, the online. And then the first thing is demonstrating the case. And then they're actually the convincing the people, the potential customers. I hope I answered your question.
No, you did. But I'm wondering, those, for example, that elderly owner that you mentioned, was she going online and searching for property solutions?
The next generation.
Ah, the daughters did. Ah,
daughters, okay. Or sons, or much younger generations.
Yeah.
And then they're...
So they are thinking about it, the younger generation. Yeah, they're just passive.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. The headache is that how to pay the property tax and how to, you know, create a sort of fund to take care of our older generations, parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And development and saving money, they can't understand how they would possibly get it.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. And then I saw also that you started handling more strategic plans, right? Like putting together a team with family members, family offices. Can you explain about that a little bit?
Well, this is another my research area or the strengths. Japan has been the country where we can find a lot of family businesses. Yeah, but the generation one, they work hard, and the generation two, they handed over most of the fortune, and then the good second generations make it larger, or, you know, they add more fortunes, add more properties or something. But the third generation, they don't know how to operate, how to manage the business.
That's and what then, we were just talking about.
Yeah. So this is the issue. And then now the most of the generations is the second or third, or probably fourth generations, after, you know, the World War II, after experiencing the good growth, the economic growth of Japan. And now what I want to suggest is, look, before the handing over everything to the third party, like through the M&A or something, that looking at what your former generations have been done so far, like the accumulated wealth or the properties or the intangible assets as well, right? So they put everything together and think about good portfolio management or something, and you can create some wealth while managing your business.
Mm.
So this is our concept of family office.
Those are very popular overseas. We have some customers like that ourselves, but they're not really famous or popular in Japan, right?
Yeah. Therefore, I just want to, you know, it's not, I'm not sure this is good terminology, but I just want to educate local people. And then, look at the overseas countries, and then we have strong history of family business, and then looking at your wealth or your property, tangible, intangible, and manage. And then now we have good environment, like the low interest rate, and then the stability of the property, and then looking at your abundant, you know, the properties, something, right?
Which every family has.
Yeah. They come from the main business or the family asset. Yeah, and they're looking at this, and then they make the best use of it. Yeah, you can count on my support or something.
Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akia Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akia Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akia Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akia-mart.com. That's A-K-I-Y-A-M-A-R-T, akia-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
Did you manage to make one already, or just starting?
On my way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the trust is important, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I have been, you know, there talking with some family owners, and then the, you know, this developing the relation, the trust at this moment.
Okay. So challenge. Let's say there is somebody who doesn't have an aparto and they don't have a large land plot. Mm. Let's say our typical, the typical Akia that our customers buy is going to be, let's say, up to maybe 1,000 square meter plot of land with just one old boroboro house, family home on it.
Mm-hmm.
What can, if somebody like that hasn't saved any money and of course not enough for development, what sort of solution could you cook for them?
Oh, it's depend on the location, and if the location is good, there, as you said, we can refurbishment. We can make a refurbishment, a renovate, and then make it some the good residence and lease it, or some good small office, Soho style office, and then the lease it. Yeah.
What's a good location for that kind of project? What would you define as a good location?
For instance, Kyoto.
Oh, within the city itself?
Yeah, city center,
How
CBD.
About Choto Inaka, a little bit rural?
Choto Inaka seems to be challenging, but I still, there are some potential, probably, and then this is something we real estate professionals need to think about it. What I'm doing is like the hospitality, like the
Yokan or
elderly people's care house.
Ah, okay, nursing home,
care house.
Because those are needed everywhere. Right?
Yes. The zoning, right?
Yeah.
And then even though the first residential this zoning, the issue Teiso Jujo, and then I think the care house, the nursing home is allowed. Yeah. So this is one solution, and then I have been doing this kind of stuff.
Maybe commercial, like warehouses and stuff like that, or something.
Warehouse impossible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good warehouse, and the nursing home, and also the not necessarily be old people, but the children with some the handicapped. And then they really need to be cared, and the government has been supporting to take care of them.
Yeah, I have another company that helps foreigners invest in franchise businesses, and there's a quite successful franchise business, and that this is exactly what they do. They set up disabled homes. It's not exactly a nursing home. It's just like between a nursing home and a normal rental, they have some people helping them cook together. That's definitely a good business.
Yeah.
Mm. And that's like elderly. It's needed everywhere, right?
Yeah. And the cash flow wise, this seems to be this seems to make sense. Because government somehow support this kind of business, right?
And they always provide the supply of tenants, so you're not dependent on economic ups and downs as well, right?
Exactly, exactly. So now we are targeting those kind of people, and then we just create sort of the a business plan and a cash flow projection for them to get the finance, and then they try to bring some solution for the large parcel of land.
So in those cases where the plan is to set up a business of some sort, do you also help them find the contractor who will run the business?
The operator, you mean?
The operator, sorry,
I have been approaching two directions. One is operator and the other one is investor.
Okay.
So
an investor might buy that from them to set up their own thing.
Investor, they buy the possible land and build a property, and then they get the rental revenue from the potential tenant, which means operator.
Yeah.
So as long as they have
Like a sublease kind of thing.
It seems to be. As long as they have good operator, they are willing to do some this kind of investment.
I think we've got a lot of customers to send you away, actually. That sounds very interesting for a lot of our customers, because they buy these very cheap properties, 10 million yen or less, and then some of them just want to use them as holiday homes after they refurbish them a little bit, but some of them want to start some business there and try to make more money.
Yeah, and then in that case, the nursing home, as I said, also like the handicapped people's home, I think we have to be careful because there's some laws and regulations.
Of course.
Like the seismic risk or something, right? And then we have to put some reinforcement or something.
But you would analyze and appraise all of that before anything happens, right?
Yeah, I can provide this kind of service or this kind of, you know, their opinion.
And then how do you charge for your services? Is it on an hourly retainer? Is it per project percentage?
It's depend.
Depends on the project.
Yeah.
Okay. But an initial, for example, an initial analysis and suggestion of potential projects, that would, I guess, be on an hourly basis, right?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Does that cost, I'm just curious for people who are interested, does this cost hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars?
22,000 Japanese yen per
22,000 Japanese yen per hour. That's not much at all. Okay.
I can increase.
No. But I mean, considering what you're potentially giving to them, I don't think that's much.
Yeah.
This is fantastic. Thank you. And where can people find you if they want to contact you or receive more information?
Email me.
We'll have all of that in the show notes, if people are just listening and they don't have time to look, can you just tell them what's the best place to find you?
Email me the...
Yeah, of course.
Ytomizuka, Ytomizuka, at abrilisjp.com, abrilisjp.com.
ABRLIS. Oh, do you want me to read that?
Hi.
Okay. So that's Ytomizuka, Ytomizuka, at abrilisjp.com.
Hi.
Fantastic. And we'll link to the website as well. Do you have a website there?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll link to the website as well. And you're also, I think you're active on LinkedIn as well, right?
Yes.
If people look for your name again, Yuko Tomizuka,
yes.
They will find you. Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time and this great opportunity. Thank you.
Pleasure having you.
All right. Told you that was a good one. Tomizuka-san is absolutely amazing. In my view, I rarely have the chance to interview someone who's in such a unique and much needed field of work here in Japan. And that's definitely the case with her. I absolutely loved having her drop by, and I cannot wait to see what kind of projects we might be able to work on together in the future. A real treat of a conversation. And again, quick reminder, the recent Japan Real Estate Summit downloads page is now up. Hop over to nippontradings.com, watch the presentations, download the slides, enjoy the photo gallery. It was a great day, and the next summit to be announced soon, which will probably be held in October this year, promises to be even better. Watch this space.
Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku!